Dan, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm obviously here. And whereabouts are you looking, are we?
Well, we're in Liverpool Bay, a place called New Brighton. So New Brighton's on a peninsula. We're surrounded three sides by sea. We've got the River Dee, one side, the Irish Sea, the other, and the River Mersey, the other. So we're on a peninsula, and New Brighton is in the sort of far corner, over the water from Liverpool. So it's like Brooklyn to Manhattan.
And tell us about the history of this area.
History of New Brighton. In 1830, this was just a series of sand dunes. So it was about 170 acres of sand dunes, and it was called Rock Point, and that's what we called the company Rock Point Leisure. And a guy called James Averton, that's what we named the pub, James Averton, used to be called the railway. We decided to name after him because in 1830 his view from Liverpool was over River Mersey, and he could see 170 acres of sand dunes. And he came over, bought them off a local landowner, and then he went down to Brighton on the south coast and decided to form a New Brighton up the north. So that's a bit of a potted history, what it was called, New Brighton.
And looking at the area itself, it was obviously quite a deprived area at that point. What was it like before, I suppose, you came in and rescued it, I suppose, in a way, saved it as a community?
Well, taking it right back, when James Averton started developing it, he wanted to have like a place of wonder in the north, and he wanted to have a place for, you know, workers in Liverpool and things to be able to come and spend the weekend and holiday and things like that. And it once was the third largest seaside town in the UK, so it had a number of things that were real big attractions. So at the bottom of this road, there used to be two piers. The ferry would come across and dock at one of them. And that brought like 5 million day trippers a year just from Liverpool. It had, as long with the two piers, it had 11 theatres. It had the largest ballroom in Europe. And on top of it sat the largest tower in the country, the bigger than Blackpool's. In the ballroom, the Beatles played there 27 times, the Rolling Stones, Little Richard, it was who's who of the sort of you know, bands and music scene. We also have the largest outdoor baths in the world. That was just sighted down the road. Now Morrison's sits on that site, the supermarket. I had another large Lido on the other end of the promenade. It had it had basically like a Wembley of the north as well. It had a big stadium where, you know, football was played and stock cars were raced around. It had a lot of things to attract in the sort of Victorian era, people over here and things to do. Where a lot of seaside towns started hitting the, you know, hard times was, you know, in the 60s with package holidays coming out, you know, the Costas in Spain. And then in the 80s, you know, the 90s, you had like, you know, the cheap airfares and things. And with the Berlin Wall coming down in 89, a lot of Europe getting opened up, it meant that people's habit changed and started holidaying abroad and not necessarily in the UK. And seaside towns that were closer to London and places like Brighton and Bournemouth and places like that fared a bit better. Blackpool was still, you know, still is quite a large seaside town, but a lot of places like New Brighton ended up getting quite depressed. And, you know, one of the reasons is that a lot of the things and infrastructure that was built, you know, was crumbling, not maintained, so the tower had been taken down in, you know, a long time ago. The ballroom, which was just a magnificent place, that burned down in 69. The piers went about the same time, early 70s, and New Brighton Baths lasted until about 1919, that went. So I was born in 73, and I grew up in the, you know, I remember the 80s around here. There was a lot of heroin problems, there was a lot of drug issues. And also, we're very much on the end of the sort of, you know, the end of the line, really, for New Brighton. So a lot of unemployment. a lot of deprivation in Liverpool as well. And then, you know, people like me, you were leaving school at the time, you know, a lot of people, anyone who went to university never came back again. And then, there was no real hope around here. So in the 90s, you know, in early 2000, you had a bit of a renaissance in the fact that they built a development on this promenade, which now houses something called cinema, which is good, and a few other things. But mainly it's sort of like mid-tier brands, so, you know, big chains and things like that. And nothing really unique that you couldn't find in any you know, retail park. Now, I'd started a business when I was 18 in New Brighton in a mate's flat, which ended up in quite a big business. It was a training company for the hospitality trade. And we ended up growing that business, mainly concentrating out of the area, sort of London and all around the UK. So we ended up having an office in Glasgow. We had a big office down the road in Birkenhead, 250 staff. We ended up employing there. And that business grew to an international one, so we were training about 4 million people a year in 28 countries, from the Middle East, Europe, as far as Kazakhstan, over in the States, for some of the biggest brands in the world. And after 28 years of running it, when I was like 45, I just got to the stage where I thought, I don't want my whole life to be defined by training. And then at the same time, I was looking at the town I grew up in, because although I worked in London about 3 or 4 days a week, I still always had a house here, and living in my home was always New Brighton. And it used to just annoy me coming down this road and going in the Perth Rock and the harbour and seeing, you know, half the businesses on this road, half the buildings on this road just boarded up. And it was getting worse and worse, so there was a lot of flight tipping, a lot of vandalism, not many jobs, 60% of the street lights were out. In the development they did when we did the promenade, they also developed some of this road. This road ran right down to what was 2 piers at the end of the road. And they had long gone. And a lot of the buildings were derelict, so they had compulsory purchased them and turned them into housing. Half the road is now housing. And you know, just looking at this just made me think, if we're not careful, the rest of this road will be compulsory purchased and end up as housing. And the issue when you just bulldoze businesses and then try and turn a high street around is that people just live in an area, but there's nothing for them to do. And then they're dominated by the sort of brands that people give us. And people think they have a choice in a place like New Brighton. And up until recently, they didn't. I could eat healthier in Euston Station and have more choice there than I could in the town I lived in. Because what happens is companies, our big brands, they look at what's called a demographic report, and they say, okay, 15,000 people live in that town, but maybe blue collar, working class. So they get a Bello Italia, not you know, an Ando's. They get a Burger King, not a Nando's. They get a Travel Lodge, not a Hilton. They get, you know, brands that suit that demographic.
Yeah.
And my view is the problem with that was the demise of the high streets as well. You know, people stopping using independent businesses. And not everyone wants a Bella Italia. Not everyone wants a brand which is decided ultimately not by the people who live there, but by somebody in an office in London who often will never set foot in the areas that we're rolling these chains out. They just go, we need to roll another 200 out. These are the sort of identified areas that have a similar sort of demographic, and they just do it. And you end up with places that the heart gets ripped out of them. And it really, the so-called choice you get is decided by people who, in the most part, will never set foot in the places that they're making decisions for. Overlay that with councils that have very short-term views, just tick boxes, no real vision, and you get the real demise of the high street. And, you know, if you and I were blindfolded and parachuted into 99% of high streets in the UK, blindfolds taken off, you wouldn't know where the fuck you were, because it would be, you know, they all look the same. And it, you know, I did quite a bit of research before I started this. I was looking for something else to get my teeth into. And that included, I went down to the House of Lords and did a select committee into the future of seaside towns, because I got asked to give evidence there to the chairman of the Institute of Licensing, which is in all things licensed in England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. And I've done a couple of select committees before. And I got this one drop on my lap, which was the future of seaside towns. And I thought, well, I've grown up in one all my life. And you see the cycles, you know, I see the cycles of CPL after running it, you know, by the time I sold it all, 30 years. So you go through ups and downs, you go through recessions, and you build a company. And I loved that, the road I used to, you know, grew up on as a kid. I used to deliver newspapers around here. And you see successive, you know, cycles and ultimately a downward spiral. So when you walk down a road and there's most of the street lights are out, bins aren't getting empty, there's fly tipping everywhere, the pubs, you know, pubs, restaurants, businesses, shops are just steel shuttered up. You think, you know, it's not rocket science sometimes turning these places around. We've got a strong community spirit. It's about engaging, and the first building I bought was next door. And I thought, I've got a window of opportunity to try and do something in a town I love. So the first thing I did was buy, rent or lease as many of the boarded up buildings as I could. Not because I wanted to run them all, but because I didn't want them getting in the hands of big chains. And big chains didn't want to come anywhere near here. But obviously they do, you know, as it gets started to turn around, they do. And that's one of the things I want to keep out. So,
how hard is that?
We'll always come in and say, okay, that's on the up now, let's open a Costa on the road, or let's open, you know. And as soon as you get one or two of them, well, then you start looking like every other place. Yeah. And I also didn't want to gentrify it to the point where nobody could, you know, afford to be here. But what I wanted to do was offer opportunities to people to start their own business, to, you know, so the building we're in now, Rockbank Records, this has 10 businesses in, we only run two of them. So it's got sort of bar, coffee shop area, it's got a vinyl record store, but it's got a barber's, tattoo parlors, it's got three art studios, it's got a number of other things that are in here, and they're all independent businesses, you know, that operate out of here. No leases signed, no, you know, deposits going to pick us down, just give us like 50 quid a week or 75 quid a week. We'll find the space for you and you can start your own business. So really what we were trying to do here, is what I was trying to do, is say, okay, well, when you've got rid of all the compelling reasons to visit a seaside town like New Brighton, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a seaside town, it can be, you know, a town centre, is look back at the history, look back at the sort of, you know, the heritage of it, and then say, okay, well, what can we do moving forward? And one of the first things we did, because we were buying buildings and leasing them, and there was a lot of building work to be done. So the first 12 months didn't have anything open. But what I did do was mobilise all the kids, and some of them were causing problems and antisocial behaviour.
How did the kids react to that? I mean, that must be a great thing for them.
Because when I was CPL, I still drank in a couple of pubs over here. And yeah, when you put me, you know, when you pull up a 100 grand car or something, right, because I was making a lot of money then, and with CPL, you know, a lot of kids only see that if you're a drug dealer or a footballer, yeah, you know, or something like that, and they don't link it to actually just hard work. And the fact that I've built a business up from a mate's flat in New Brighton. So what I wanted was just, you know, speak to them, put them together and say, listen, do you want to grow up in a dump place, or do you want to try and help me clear it up? And I spoke to all the businesses and said, look, I'm going to be opening a number of places. I don't want to compete with you, I want to compliment you. So we're not going to be going head-to-head competition. We're going to try and open as many places as possible that compliment, you know. And also, the one
when
thing...
When you went to the businesses with that proposal, were you met with that kind of edge or, you know...
No, not really. They I knew a few of them anyway, and... The other thing is, as I was saying, I have the kids sweeping the streets, emptying the bins, clearing fly tipping up, painting lampposts, sanding benches down and re-varnishing them. And another thing that I'd say, when I went to the House of Lords report, which I gave evidence for, it's a 2-year, £4 million report, we came out the top model, the sort of model I came up with. They said this could be the future of Seaside Towns. So, I looked in, I went to every seaside town in the UK, I went to the States, I looked at places like Brooklyn and you know, on the East and West Coast of America. And, it, you know, I learned from different models and things. I looked in New York at like Broken Windows Theory in the 80s, where, you know, and that goes along the lines of if you have one building on a road and there's a broken window, if that window isn't fixed, the chances of another window in the same building getting broken disproportionately sort of go up over the next few weeks. You get the whole building derelict and ransacked. I mean, the buildings either side have a knock-on effect, you know, they don't want to be
dominant.
Yeah, and it's right down to things like picking litter up, not encouraging people to have a community spirit. So, you know, you won't see that much litter on the road around social behaviour now, because, you know, I got the kids painting benches, sanding down, you know, lampposts, painting. If they sand a wall down, paint it, or a bench or something like that, they're less likely to then go and vandalise it. And a lot of kids just want something to do, you know, so they want to be busy, they don't want to just talk about. And these sorts of things are important. So what we try to do is keep kids off the screen, get them busy doing stuff. At the same time, you know, we opened the pub about 12 months later in the restaurant for BB. I didn't want to compete with the other pubs who had a different type of offer on. I got onto the council and said, empty the bins, do something, you know, start to fix the streetlights. Because it's a human right to have light and feel safe, and it's not just the, you know, if you can't even change a bulb or empty a bin, how do you think that makes a community feel? It makes them think you don't give a toss about it. And it also has a big enough on effect, you know, come winter and icy streets and things, it can be the difference between somebody feeling safe going out for a pint of milk, being able to not slip over, being able to not, you know, if a place is vibrant, it's open, it's bright, all of these things are important. And, you know, growing up around here, you'd see over years, the front page of like, you know, the local newspaper, and it'd say, this is going to happen, you write, or that's going to happen, and none of it ever came to fruition. And what I wanted for people to see is that this isn't just a pie-in-the-sky idea. Yeah. That things were going to happen. So I have people out in high business all the time, and we were doing stuff every day, we were trying. And another thing was, I looked at the buildings and thought, it's dead easy to knock something down and build it with, you know, just the cheap crap that they throw up, or even down on the promenade where they get rid of art deco, you know, infrastructure, and they just throw these things up. And it used to really annoy me. So you walk down the stairs of the post office, and framing shop and things. You know, these were built like 1860s, you know, 1870s. And what I wanted to do was, I thought art and music and culture has got to have a big part of it. So we started
as well.
Yeah, we started exactly in the history. So we started, started getting artists local and international, to paint murals on walls. And we were already painting all the street furniture and smarting it up. But I wanted some key sort of like, you know, murals and stuff that draw attention to the beauty of the building. But also a variety of different sort of, you know, portraits to, you know, more abstract stuff. sort of temporary stuff. And that then started brightening the place up. And my idea was, if we could create the UK's biggest free open air street art gallery, coupled with the fact we open a gallery on the road, which we've done next door, like a London quality sort of like art gallery, because a lot of them are quite elitist and people don't feel them or they can, you know, they can walk in like an expensive car show and get looked at down
by them. Yeah, I was in there and I met the gentleman at some bookers in Liverpool, and I got that feeling. If I'm honest, I tend to avoid places like that.
Yeah.
But when I'm in there, it was so unique. You felt.
Well, that one, we rotate more, so that one is a load of teachers who teach at Wilmot College, College, and we've done exhibitions in the situation with roads is in, we have bus stops and no buses stop at. They're starting again after 4.5 years of been doing it, they've just decided to reroute the buses down here. So literally we have bus stops, no buses stop down. We have 3 banks, no banks. We had a supermarket which was a purpose-built quick save, failed, then it was Summerfield, short, then it was Co-op, short, then it was Budgeons, short, then for 7 years just boarded up. It sucks the life out of places if you've got boarded up places. And also, it just means people fly to, you know, and you know, these buildings are just left to rot. And what I wanted to do is, you know, try and, you know, turn them around with art and culture. But even like everything you're seeing here, you know, and a lot of places we've got, these are all upcycled. So one building, you know, a couple of different builders in, and we've used local builders, local sparks, local plumbers, who literally live on the streets, haven't used a big contractor. I've got just come in and said, right, okay, we need builders, we need painters, we need, you know, all this. And that's again when you're pulling the community together. And, you know, one of the builders said, I've just been given a job to knock down 3 pubs. He goes, there's loads of stuff, and there's one of them levelled, and it all goes to landfill. And we get all these, like, you know, get all this sort of, like, furniture and stuff, and think, we live in a world where we just throw shit away. And actually, you can upcycle, you can do stuff. I mean, this is, like, well-made stuff, and you repurpose it. Another point was that walking up and down the road and seeing what was left, I thought, well, we've got a chemist, we've got a pharmacist, a pharmacy, we've got an optician, we've got a greengrocer that's been a greengrocer since 1890, and my guy Ian, who's there now, his family have been running it since, well, for 42 years, 43 years. These are the things we've got to protect at all costs.
Yes, absolutely.
Because the other benefit of being, I mean, you know, before that was a gallery while we were buying different things, I had an office desk in the window, and I wrote to every resident, said, look, I'm not a developer, it's the first time I've got a local resident who wants to try and turn this place around, being a few mates and things, and we're not going to get everything right, but we want to listen to what you want, you know, and we spent, you know, I spent every day and every night here, like 365 days a year, every day and every night. And I watch people's habits, I listen to people. I'm obviously going out on the street a lot. You'll see me out on the street every single day and night here, talking to people. And I've watched the old deer who walked up the road 3 times a week to the greengrocer, and she could buy as many things, you know, a few carrots, a few potatoes, whatever, to make dinner for that night, you know, on the next day, and then come back up again. Now, she wouldn't make it down the hill to Morrison's and back. And also, she knew the greengrocer had been there 40 years, so she talked to Ian from there. You know, the opticians are there, the post office is there, the, you know, pharmacies there. And although we didn't have banks and buses and things, this road is one of the oldest in Europe, and it used to serve the needs of everyone, you know. And if you want to turn a high street round, in my view, you should need to go back to more of those things, so people can go and you know, people should be proud of where they come from, and we want to. And you start that spark and start doing it. And I think this can be replicated in other places, in the sense that, okay, commercial suicide in some respects to throw the amount of money and have at it, and but. it was something that I wanted to do.
I get a feeling that the money is an issue. It's not, you're not, the money's not important. What's important to you is the community. And obviously growing up here, and I suppose giving something back to the community.
Well, the thing is, I mean, all the plants you see on the road, we paid stuff, we put them in before we did anything. That's before we opened anywhere. We probably spent £1 million on things we don't even own or anything, just smarting the place up. And I had a few run-ins for council, over it all. But, I mean, I've spent just about everything I've got, even selling TPL, which I sold for a knockdown rate. It was worth about £25 million, but I sold it to people I didn't want to asset strip it. And I'm getting rid of all the jobs and people I've worked with for years. So I sold it for about £6 million, and I've put pretty much every penny I've got in down here. And it wasn't about, for me, you know, I never wanted to see it boarded up again. I never wanted to, you know, when I was about 10, I remember getting a knock on the door and the next door neighbour died of an overdose. You know, he was 18, mum told me. And, you know, growing up around here where there wasn't any hope, there wasn't any opportunity, and then working in London and stuff and working and getting out of this sort of postcode. But I never really left, in a sense. I had a house, bought a house here when I was young. And even though I lived and worked around the world and stuff, I'd still think this was home, and it just used to really piss me off.
Dad used to say, you can have your shoes in many places, but your slippers are always home.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's kind of home. I mean, one of the great lines I heard, I was talking to a gentleman outside here today, and he said, you can spend billions building something, but it doesn't necessarily give you spirit. You've built a spirit, and it's more important than anything else. And one of the things that it made me think of, the Jerry, the Facebooker song, about, you know, people around every corner, they always know your name, you know, and it's like that here. Everyone knows each other. Yeah. They love it. I sat there, and there was a guy, old guy sitting chatting to me, and the family was sitting feeding the kids, and it almost felt like, you know, if I can say this, it was sort of like a better version of the Reaper Band. You felt you were somewhere where it didn't matter who you were, didn't matter what kind of person you were, you're welcome. You know, and people will talk, just like Jerry says, doesn't matter who you are, we don't care what your name is, son, you know? That's what it's like here. And you've built that, you've created that, you've brought back a sense of pride. And you can see your face, I'm watching you, and you can feel the pride you've got.
I think so communities just need a bit of a spark, a bit of luck, and a bit of edge. Because you've often got communities that are just beaten down by the system, you know. They're beaten down by governments that don't care less. That, you know, properties sometimes are owned by absent landlords, but then for them, you know, the supermarket space, a place like that, but never even set foot in your brain. It's a line on a spreadsheet, you know. Brands that get rolled out by decisions when people are sat in an office in New York or Canary Wharf, they can give a shit about the area that they're, you know, doing something with. It's just literally a line in the spreadsheets. And if, you know, I grew up around here, did paper around here, started a business around here, worked in a bar, managed a place down the road, was doing A levels. I never went to uni, I'd started a business by then. But I just thought there's so many fond memories as well. There are people, you know, remember meeting at the Tower Ballroom and stuff like that, which is now gone. And when you see a once great place just decimated over decades and decades, you know, there's decisions people make, councils, you know, governments, literally can affect whole generations for decades and decades and decades, the hopes, the opportunities, the fears, everything. And I wanted to do something that was a bit of a test, but something that would be sustainable, something that, you know, this is not about me, and it can't, you know, the last thing, this is about the next sort of generation, you know. So we've got Band the Mysteries, for example, two of them working on the bar in here, and now been signed by a major record label just on a big US tour, European tours, festivals. We're doing a big mural on the side for them. you know, of them. That's, we should be exporting talent from Ukraine.
So,
and we should be giving people, you know, well, the kids are going to pad around. They're not bad kids, they just want something, they want to feel part of something. And then, if you look at a lot of the problems in the UK, it's the fifth largest economy in the world, the world's worst in life crime. They're whole loads, and the difference between the haves and the have-nots. I worked in London, and my clients were major, you know, clients. And I'd have to get on the train sometimes, and I remember once being physically sick in the toilet, just thinking, I was brought to place, you know. You just spent more on a meal and a few things than that in a year. You know what I mean? And there's a sick culture of wealth.
Yeah.
And when you get in that circle, when you get there, it's very easy just to lose yourself and then, you know, not, you know, just to be part of it. I think it was a graduate of art, I said I wouldn't want to be a member of any club that would have me as a member. I sort of, even though I dealt with a lot of, I was around the boards of a lot of, you know, high flying businesses and, you know, and institutions and things like this. But you know, you think, I never want to lose where I came from or who I am as a person, and money will never do that for me. And you know, you've only got to turn the news on, you've only got to look at your doorsteps. Well, I live up the road, and, you know, quite a nice house. Some of my neighbours, you know, I think a lot more affluent than I was, but I think, why don't you just look just down the road from where you live? You know, instead of just going to the golf club or a couple of like restaurants or working in Manchester, London or Liverpool, I'd actually just look at on your doorstep, what's literally round the corner. There's the disconnect between, you know, people. It just amazes me sometimes as well, and it's not just, it's councils, it's governments. You know, you've had successive Conservative governments, I think the North, like Islington and London.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And Glasgow, where you're from, is something, similar, you know, face there, where you've just got wrong decision making, underinvestment, and you've only got to go out slightly. You can have some of the swanky parts. You've only got to go out slightly, and there's just forgotten.
Seems to be a thing.
Areas everywhere.
Seems to be a thing. It's a modern thing where instead of, you know, saving a small area, they'll push them people out and then build in. So they'll push the poverty out of that area and invest in it, like you say, with the brands and that, and it just pushes the problem somewhere else. You've sort of done the opposite. You've brought everyone back and sort of worked in the community you're from, you know, and it's for instance, I did a bit of research today, and there's no saying don't shit on your own doorstep, you know, and 42% reduction in antisocial behaviour in the area in the past 4.5 years. You've been here 4.5 years.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying you did it, but you did. You're responsible. And it's not because you've gone out there and waved the magic wand, but you've gone out there as part of this community, as one of the people who left you off here, and you said, look guys, we can do this together. All of it. I can't do it on my own. We're all have to come together. And they have. They've just done it. And they took so much pride in this area. You know, and for you, it's not even a legacy. It's just something important. It's just something part of your life.
But the thing about it is, it's going to carry. I want this to be sustainable, and I want this to and I can't be about, let's say, I wanted to create a bit of a spark and a platform for the people there, where, you know, hoping to, you know, come together, you know, help each other and look after each other. So it's, you know, there's a whole load of different parts to that. But ultimately, you know, I could go one over tomorrow, but if something happens. But hopefully there's that sort of momentum. Yes, it's been challenging with lockdowns and various other things.
Was the lockdown? That must have been really, I mean, obviously, you've got a huge community that depend on each other.
Well, the lockdown, Kevin, the first one was 3.5 weeks to flatten the curve in 3.5 months. And when you get all the staff together, you go, listen, guys, you know, we've got to close the doors. We actually locked down the first time 51 weeks after we opened the pub. So we didn't even have our, it was the week before the anniversary, the 30th anniversary of the pub. Okay, first lockdown, the whole world was in the, you know, uncharted territory. By the time we got to the second one's when I changed the name of the pub to Three Bell Ends.
Absolutely.
Because I just thought, I got home, I have to do the second staff team meeting with all of them and just said, we shut down, I've got to, when we're going to be open. I mean, we gave a lot of food away, we worked through it, we started building jobs and things on, and we kept the team together. And, you know, that's why I just changed my name, but when I'm at night, I just thought we'd better learn to do and stuff. And by that time, I was thinking, this is more than just about half five or something. This is like, you know, because you could see it, the amount of contracts that were given out and all of this. And again, but Richard just got richer. And the poor have got poorer, and you see the energy crisis and everything now. But I think that as well, we got a lot of goodwill because they saw us not giving up and sticking through it. And you know, we'd open the pub Christmas Day every year. Anyone who was, I didn't want anyone to be on their own at Christmas.
I thought I was going
to
get a
head. So, you know, the first one we got, I was sat with Bernie, who's one of our bakers, comes in every day. Has a little shot of whiskey and a cider. And I said, what are you doing for Christmas, Bill? He went, oh, I'm busy. I said, you seen the family? No, the buses are off. I said, you're on your own, are you? He went, well, yeah. And I said to the staff, well, I'm not fucking having this. But, you know, because running a pub in particular, and what I wanted that pub to be was a traditional sort of pub. We come in the 1820. And you don't realise how, and this went with Toby telling me, but we people who can't afford to heat the houses and come out and go in the pub because they get warm and stuff like that. But, so I put a bit of a mess out, said to the team, who wants to work in that? And I had some old mates from school, and I said, right, we'll volunteer and work. And so the chefs came in, and we had a couple of local community as well. One said, like, you know, Chris, who's been with us since, he said, oh, I've got many bucks off everything around. We picked old beers up and having a ball and all that. And someone were like dressed up to the nines, like we're going to a ball. And it was, it just, I mean, we had calls from like family members of theirs saying, oh, you know, my mum passed away years ago, and you go, I just want to thank you, it's my dad would have been on his own. You picked him up and brought him in. And looked after him, and that's what it, you know, that's what it's about. I always said to the team, I want to remember people's names, I want to remember the dog's name, or because public house is exactly that. You know, goes, we've been in licensing, you know, this country's been the forefront of licensing for you know, hundreds of years. And it used to be a public house, it's literally that, you open your parlour up, you know. And you know, Hogarth and Cruikshank used to depict like gin alley and things, where literally gin was cheap as water, and, you know. I just think that sense of sort of community has brought, you know, people along where, you know, where we go, we can see. Sometimes when you're here every day, you don't see the sort of change, yeah. But when someone comes back and goes, shit, I know what's happening around there. That's been what I feel. Lockdown's been challenging because when, especially when you don't know when you're going to be open. And last year, we had sort of a Damocles hanging over us because, we, you know, bear in mind, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland were all locked down for Christmas, New Year. And the only reason we weren't was because Boris was partying like it was 1999 and he was caught out. Otherwise, we would have been, but you couldn't plan because you have to hold on, you know, you have to go, okay.
How did that make you feel when you discovered that Boris had killed you?
I didn't surprise me at all, but again, you look at then each one of them, the I forgot his name, I thought, probably, he was planting Wales, who, you know, one of those hardest lockdowns, and you see him passing away, you know. It was obvious by then it was just one set of rules for everyone else and one set of rules for everyone else. It does annoy you. But
one of your customers came an absolute belter. I was talking about the cost of living crisis. Just as I was coming back in, he said, I'll tell you something, mate. He says, see if Santa's struggling up there, he loses his house, tell him Santa's daughter's always welcome here. And I just thought, that summed it up, you know. Santa, if you're listening, it all goes tits up for you, there's a place here in your brain, and I think that that sums the whole place up. It's,
yeah.
Come on. If you, oh, shit, it's the band. Come on, here. There's always hope. And you're giving hope to so many people. I love it. And I think it's amazing. You know, I look at places like Barrow and Furness, and I think, God, someone like you comes into Barrow and Furness and does that. Barrow and Furness is beautiful again. And that's, I look at Blackpool. As part, I look along that coast and I think, you know, Blackpool's a lost cause. But it's not. We've people like myself who go there have made it a lost cause. We have took for granted this beautiful, beautiful seaside with all its history. And turned it, took and kissed me quick and turned it into absolute trash.
The Blackpool's a case in point. That's why we've got to fight to keep things up. We've got to fight to keep the winter gardens and places like that. Because if you knock them down and if they go, it's a lot of lumber. You know, the palace that was on the tower grounds, I mean, literally palatial. Like, you could sit like 3,500 people down to have a meal. You know, you go to the Grosvenor in Park Lane in London, it's about 1,500 people you can sit down. You know, we've lost a lot, the Art Deco baths and things, and it's about to say, okay, we can't lose any more, and we've got it. You know, can't live in the past, but you've got to fucking learn from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and, you know, that's why I'd like to get a pier back.
I was going to say, if you could bring back one thing.
Well, there's two things I'd bring back here. Pier, I'm not necessarily ferries coming to it, but maybe river taxis going out to Liverpool. I think that would be a good addition. And I think an open air bathing pool as well. Like, again, having a lighter, they're two important things. And, you know, and just use, we've got the longest promenade in the country, that should be utilised more. You know, there should be a land train or a monorail or something. And actually, there's what I wanted to do with this was just give this sort of energy and spark for it to go down the coastline, right down to Egram Arm, Seaton Ferry, Woodside, and then Rock Ferry, all of which have been massively, massively just neglected and forgotten about. That should be animated again, lots of businesses and things. And I think the council are on side now to do it. It's like a left bank sort of like, you know, development there. And across to like places like Liso and stuff. You know, because Liso's a case in point. New Brighton's about 15,000 people who live here. Liso's got 39,000 people. I think just decimated that place, just housing. So if you live in Liso, you don't live there. You don't socialise here. It's literally like a bar and booze and a chippy and some art. There's no pub, there's no restaurants, you just live there and you don't work there. Now that isn't a good, you know, that's it's got a good community spirit. But when you've got no jobs, when you have to go, you know, you just live there. There's got to be a mix, there's got to be an ecosystem, there's got to be some, you know, there's got to be things like that for people to, and you've got to protect, you know, what is it, as I said, protect things like, you know, people need. Older people have seen huge change, you know, you think like the phones that they have and with everything and digital and stuff, apps and stuff like that.
It was so fast.
Yeah, so they've already had massive changes and, you know, just keeping things and also keeping the expertise of someone like Ian, the greengrocer, the using local, you know, using local tradesmen and things like that, because they've got a vested interest as well in if they live in, you know, in and around the place, and they can help mentor some of the kids. We've got an upholsterer who comes in and does our stuff. Brian, he works with some of the kids showing him like upholstery and stuff like that.
Yo, 49 now, so
yeah.
I mean, what does the future hold for you?
Are
you going to slow down and maybe enjoy it a little bit more?
Well, in November, I had a big lump on my neck and I got diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. So I've been through like 8 months of an operation, chemo, and everything like that. So hopefully, the future's all right. I'm waiting for my next scan and I'll know then. Whether it's a one-way ticket to Switzerland or not. No, at the end of the day, I mean, even with that, I just thought, like, we're not going to be locked down now. 2022 is like, there's light at the end of the tunnel. And then I got that news, I thought it's a fucking train coming in the opposite direction. But very much, I just carried on working right through it. because the fullbacks aren't going to beat you now. You know what I mean? They were too much on us. It's been fucking inconvenient, like, in the last 8 months. But I feel a lot better now. I lost all my hair and everything. I was feeling very rough, but I feel a lot better than I did.
You look
sad.
You look happy yourself as well.
Yeah. It's good to be out there again now. That's why I'm a window of opportunity. We've got carrying on the pace and carrying on, you know, doing stuff. Because a lot of a redevelopment and regeneration of a place is about keeping people, like, believing like this is happening. It's, you know, it's not just going to, especially with some of the challenges that our world's facing and gays facing, that, you know, we're not going to give up, we're going to carry on. Because once you get past a certain momentum, then it just helps you, it's easier.
Absolutely. I mean, I look around and I see this wonderful little place. It's not lost in time, it's right where it belongs. You know,
yeah.
There's a saying about, you know, right place, wrong time. Like, this is just perfect. You know, it ticks along, it's friendly, the people are lovely, you know. And for you personally, if other councils, for instance, were washing this right now and having something to say, something wrong with other areas, what would you say? Especially like Barron and Furness, who have just been, I mean, a wonderful place that was left abandoned and is falling apart. What would you say to people there?
I think the message, I think often some of the people that could help solve some of the problems are people who are from the area who don't necessarily live there now. I think it's a combination. People who, for example, you mentioned Barron Furness. I've got a mate who lives in Kent and he's got a place in Spain and a couple of places. He came, he worked in the shipyards and stuff like that. He's got Barron and Furness and he's got a lot of money. I'll take someone like him to go back and work with some of his old mates and stuff. I've had quite a combative sort of, like, you know, 4 years or so with the council. But I think it takes local community, but it also takes a few people saying, okay, I'm going to do something, you know, at work. Council, it helps the council alongside, and it helps if you've got to get, like, planning, licensing, the police, the fire brigade, all sorts of people round the table and say, okay, how do we try and turn this place around? How do we do, you know, highways, things like that? Because some of the stuff we did, you know, I had to threaten the council and say, if you don't light the streets, I'm going to replace all the bulbs and charge you for it. Because I think it's a human right to have life. And it's also an absolutely ridiculous thing if you say, okay, so you're not going to change your bulb, but you're going to pay for some old dude who falls over and breaks the hip or something. It's a damn sight cheaper to replace, to maintain things and stuff. And I know everyone, you know, there's a lot of issues that you have with, you know, with the thought being a thing. But, I mean, we only have one penny of funding down here. Literally not one penny. And even if we've been given a bit of money, but they're going to waste money on consultancy firms that tell them to put one foot in front of another, and most of them are just the reports they write are just off the shelf. Okay, where's another town with 15,000 people? Let's just take that, change the name. There's no real thinking behind it. I would say, look at a bit of a history and heritage of the place. Look at, like, some key stakeholders, and that could just be someone who's had a shop there and weathered the storms and stuff like that. Listen to, like, local community. You know, a lot of times, like 12 months of listening, walking, you know. And then it does take some investment, and if that doesn't come from a council, problem when you go to the big sort of private equity firms and hedge funds and things like that, they are on a very simple 5-year, double your money, sell to another one. 5-year, double your money, sell to another one. And, you know, that in itself isn't sustainable all the time. You don't have to have, it's a regeneration, it's multifaceted, and it is about bringing communities on board. But I think that it also involves a bit of an injection of money, and I injected what I had in here, and there's got to be one or two people who do something similar in every town.
Absolutely. If you could pick three words to describe this area, what three words? How would you describe it in three words? Harsh one, I know. I could just say absolutely fucking brilliant, but that's three words. But this is your community, this is part of you. It's like a root, you're like a tree.
Me, Brian. The red coast.
I like that.
This has got, before it was called Rock Point, it was called Devil's Nest, and I had actually quite a few pirates and things down there. So I think it's actually got quite a bit of history of rebellion and going against. Yeah, the Rebel Coast, maybe.
Well, look, thank you very much. I know you're a busy man. I've taken absolute pleasure meeting you.
Thank you very much, Nick. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us and all that.
Absolutely amazing.